Hi, everybody. I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And I am a recovered alcoholic. And if I didn't say that, I'd be falsely humble. It's where God has brought me to, a place called recovered. I don't say recovering because that'll excuse a lot of inappropriate behavior for someone who's supposed to be on this path, right? And I don't say recovering because it's contrary to what my big book tells me and what God can do for me and has done for me. And I won't say recovering because I deny the greatness of Alcoholics Anonymous and deny the great solution to a newcomer that we can get to a place called recovered. However, getting to a place called recovered is not just some exclusive club. It's open to all. The hook is we need to follow, as a book says, a few simple rules, the 12 steps in order to experience this power, in order to experience a place called recovered, freed from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. The problem does not exist. It has been removed. And we don't do anything to make that happen other than surrender to this work and follow the plan of recovery outlined in this book. And Chris alluded to this last night about, you know, how we tweak it for ourselves. In Doctor's Opinion, it talks about, uses the words, plan of recovery. So I show up to a doctor. I was really ill last night. And if I went to a doctor's office, I would have done anything he told me to do to relieve me of the symptoms I was experiencing and not changed one bit. We show up to the doctor with the flu or some other illness, and the doctor says, okay, Pete, take this medicine four times a day, take a few days off from work, drink lots of fluids, and the flu will be gone. I'm going to follow exactly what the doctor says because I hurt so bad. Like I did last night, I would have done anything a doctor said. And I followed our plan of recovery, and in a few days, the doctor's promise to me is materialized. Because I'm back at work, feeling better, the flu symptoms are gone, and away we go, right? We have a life-threatening illness called alcoholism, which is sometimes forgotten about in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so watered down and gobbled by non-alcoholics sitting in here who forgot what it was like, or don't know what it's like for the real alcoholic who walks in here. And we forget about this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. We forget about how alcoholism wants me dead, will settle for me drunk. It becomes kind of this Knights of Columbus, let's hang out for an hour. So we have a solution for the real alcoholic who's dying of untreated alcoholism. Whether you're in here for the first time or in here for the 100th time, whether you're subscribing to this work for the first time to get alcohol out of your life and get rid of the symptoms called alcoholism, or are experiencing hitting a wall in here for a little while and running around Alcoholics Anonymous untreated, we subscribe to the plan of recovery. How come, with a life-threatening illness, where we don't tweak the solution when we go to a doctor for the flu, we don't rewrite the prescription plan, how come it's rewritten in here? Fourth step, I'm not ready for that. My sponsor says don't do a fourth step because that may make me drink. And the book is good, but I'm going to do my program. It's an individual program. I work my program, right? And in the big book, it says there is a singular solution, not plural. It doesn't say there are a whole bunch of solutions. It says there is a solution, right? And again, back to the doctor's opinion, it says plan of recovery. Why do we tweak it in Alcoholics Anonymous? Why is it changed? Why have we gotten so far away from what this thing looked like when it began that it resembles nothing like Alcoholics Anonymous? I was sharing with Mark earlier, some places look like bad group therapy. Who has a problem they want to share about today? We're already in serious trouble. Case in point, I go to a meeting in my town in Jersey. My home group is called the Vision for You group in Union, New Jersey. And we talk about the solution to alcoholism. And most people in my town hate us. We're referred to as the elitist AA group, the big book Nazis, big book dumpers. Don't go to that group. Don't hang around those people. Until they hit a bottom, and then they come looking for us, right? So So I'm at a meeting in my town, and it was, who has a topic or burning desire they'd like to share? That's how the meeting opened. I said, okay, we're in trouble. But I was still, and I listened. Maybe I came to get, and I stayed to give, right? And this one gentleman shared, and it went something like this. I don't know how I got to this meeting tonight. I was driving down this highway, and I looked at all my old watering holes. He says, I'm thinking about a drink. I've been in treatment so many times. I've been in and out of AA. I'm going to die. I know I'm going to pick up a drink. I need help. And he went on and on and on. And I says, here's a guy who needs some help. So I was thinking that the group would shift, would change their focus for the new person. Right before he shared, a gentleman shared about for about 2 days on how he's unemployed again. After this new guy shares, someone raises their hand and says, I can identify with that guy. And he says, great. He's going to hook into that new person. And he went, he said this, I remember what it was like when I lost my job and I was out of work. And the next person talked about getting laid off. The next person talked about unemployment. And it went on and on and on. And that poor alcoholic who needed help and needed a solution was forgotten about because their issues, their dramas of the day were more important than helping a real alcoholic, which made me think, if they're in AA talking about getting laid off from work, are they even alcoholics? Maybe the only real alcoholics in that room that night were me and that new person. And so I went over to make the approach, and the powers that be there kept me away from that guy. And I had to really fight to get to him and talk to him about alcoholism and a solution. But they didn't want to hear from me. And when I tell you that maybe that guy and me were the only real alcoholics in the room, take inventory of the groups you're going to. Because in a lot of groups, that's the real deal. If there's 20 people in a meeting, is it possible that all 20 aren't alcoholics? That the majority of the meeting, like most of AA, is top-heavy in fellowship, and we have no clue what's going on with recovery and service. And service being one drunk working with another, offering them a solution so they can experience the glory of God and then go back into the fellowship and pull somebody else out. How many meetings do we go to are filled with real alcoholics? You can experience that, and you'll know right away because it's evidenced in what you see and what's being discussed before and after the meeting, and certainly while the meeting is going on. They're called pockets of enthusiasm. And people are sharing about the solution and are excited about the solution. And when I need to talk to my, when I need to talk about the divorce, I need to talk about the cat or the dog or my job or my boss, I have a sponsor. And I read him inventory about my problems with that stuff. And if I need to share some dramas, there's something called a restaurant or the diner, and I can bend someone's ear for an hour and a half about my little dramas, right? And they'll listen to me. I've gotten to a place where I have my dramas. And self gets in the way, and I experience fear, I'll experience resentment, I'll experience anger. But I have a solution to work with it, and I can share about it with someone, and I'm not going to take up 2 days in sharing about it. Because getting past it is more important to me than being in it. Because if I'm in a place of fear, if I'm in a place of resentment, what kind of service can I be to someone else? And I have, the road for me has narrowed, and the amount of pain I can endure is very little. Especially when I know there's a solution to it. Part of this topic I'm supposed to share is on carrying this message. What message is being carried by the home group? Does everyone need to work the steps? And the first consideration is this. Is my recovery based in abstinence or is my recovery based in spirit? Am I clear that this is spiritual life or spiritual death? Is my recovery based in abstinence? Is my recovery based in, you know, just staying away from a drink? I didn't pick up a drink today, so I'm a winner, right? My amends is that to my family is that I'm not drinking anymore. That's enough amends. I come to AA and I can share about anything I want. I don't have to sponsor people. I don't need to do the steps. Well, apparently staying away from a drink is the beginning and end of it all, and then I question that person if they're real alcoholics or not. And what does their life look like? How's their living condition? Are they taking these principles into their homes, occupations, and affairs, or are they AA angels for the 1 hour, and then the rest of the 23, they're house devils? What does that look like, right? You know, you walk in today, would you like some water? Sure, have my seat. How are you today? Let's talk about our feelings. They go home, and they're cursing at the wife because she burned dinner. But for that 1 hour, they were spiritual gurus. If my recovery is based in abstinence, I'm not really concerned with much. And trust me, if I or Chris are at the podium, you can't wait for the two of us to go home and back to the States. Right? If my recovery is based in spirit, we're looking at something completely new. Because it's vital, life-giving when I do and life-threatening when I don't, vital for me to have a spiritual experience. It's vital to me to experience the revolution and to experience God. It's vital to me to go work with others. And it's just as vital to me to find out what's going on within my home group and my local AA meetings. What message are we passing on? If you have a third edition with a cover, you look at a third edition. I'm not a fan of the fourth edition, and I'll spend an hour talking about why, but I won't do it now. They had to correct a lot of things in that fourth edition. On the fly page in the third edition, about the second paragraph down, it says, "But the basic text, pages 1 to 164, have remained unchanged. This is the AA message." And they make reference to it as it was done in 1939, printed in 1939. Pages 1 to 164 have remained unchanged. This is the AA message. So, the question to consider is, what kind of message is my group carrying? Is my group carrying the message from the first portion of this book? And more specifically, and Chris is going to talk a lot more about sponsorship, as a sponsor, what message am I passing on to the person who comes to me? Do I stand at the door ready? Flip over to page 18 for a moment. Bottom of the page, squiggly writing. It says, "But the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, am I an alcoholic who has found the solution? Who is properly armed with facts about himself, am I clear about my truth? Can genuinely win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours." Bill and Bob did it to Bill Dotson, and Bill did it with Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob said about Bill, "This guy's got 15 minutes and I'm done." And 5 hours later, they were still going at it. They spoke each other's language. Bill and Bob anteed up, if you will, for Bill Dotson. Let's tell him what we were like. That we're not coming in as physicians. We're not coming in as mom and dad saying, "You better not do this." We're going to get down to where he is and talk his language. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. That the man or woman who is making the approach has already had the same difficulty, that he or she obviously knows what he's talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect, he is a man with a real answer. That he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful. That there are no fees to pay, no access to grind. You know, it isn't like, well, you know, you're going for an hour therapy session, why do they end at 50 minutes? Right? And then they want their money. I'll sit with a drunk as long as it takes. And when they want to walk out, they can. And when we're done, we're done. But I come out the real alcoholic as a man with the real answer who's clear about my truth, who offers a solution if they care to have it. If not, we'll go about our own way. You go your way, I'll go mine. Am I carrying a message of depth and weight? In Doctor's opinion, it talks about carrying a message of depth and weight if they are to recreate their life and have their lives grounded in a power greater than themselves. It's vital here. It's a huge responsibility to what sort of message we're carrying. That's why the numbers have fell off. That's why people in AA are dying. We're interested in going into the detoxes and the treatment centers to give meetings. AA goes into all these places to save the alcoholics there, and so many of us are dying in here. Because we've become this contemporary, middle-of-the-road solution fellowship. What do I mean by middle of the road solution? What is that? Any kind of information that doesn't give me clear-cut directions on how to have a spiritual experience. For example, 90 meetings in 90 days. My group does not talk about 90 meetings in 90 days. My sponsor, you'll never hear him say 90 meetings in 90 days, nor will Chris or I. First of all, let's challenge that. When this thing first kicked off, you couldn't make 90 meetings in 90 days. There wasn't 90 meetings on the planet. Yet the recovery rate was through the roof. Yet we've replaced 90 meetings in 90 days with God. We use that instead of God. And our book is really clear. We had to quit playing God. Why? It didn't work. Yet we'll play God with a simple statement, make 90 meetings in 90 days, we'll tell a newcomer. Like that's the beginning and end of it all. Like that is the solution rather than God. Yet aren't I playing God when I tell a newcomer who walks in here, whether it's after treatment or detox or walking in off the streets, who can't stop drinking. They cannot stop drinking. They're living step one. No power, choice, and control, and a blind man can see their life's unmanageable. And we'll tell that person, make 90 meetings in 90 days. Like we know they're going to be able to stop drinking for 90 days without power. That's playing God. That's arrogant. And that's not taking responsibility for what they ought to be doing. And that is having a spiritual experience as a result of these steps. Then telling the new person who walks in the door, guess what? You never have to pick up a drink again, and I have a way to do that. Dr. Bob says, quit drinking for good and all. In our book, it says, stopping altogether. These are the book's words, not mine. Permanent sobriety. And that's something we ought to be, like my home group is shouting from the rooftops, we have a solution for you, you never have to pick up a drink again. Not hang in there, not do it a day at a time, not here's a quarter, call me when you want a drink, you can do it. Your last drunk is done. If you follow a few simple rules laid out in the book. And that's what a home group ought to be talking about. Not the dramas of life, not column two meetings. You know what I mean by column two? They did this to me, so let's talk about that for the hour. Rather than someone walking in the door saying, I can't stop drinking, sit down, we have a solution for you. Are you a real alcoholic? You suffer from the obsession, the phenomenon, craving, spiritual malady. Okay, let's go to work. And then the whole group changes to talk about that person and what they can do to recover and recreate their life. And I just want to kick this out about carrying this message. We usually focus on the new person. Most important member at any meeting is the newcomer, right? So let's help that newcomer recreate their life, get reborn, get resurrected in Alcoholics Anonymous. We come here like the dying, and we're reborn. We're given new lives. We have great power. See, contemporary AA will tell you, I don't have power. We're given great power. We're just not the power. We're given great power. Page 68 talks about that. That God will demonstrate through us what He can do. That's great power. We get great power in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So we're focused in on the newcomer, the dying alcoholic, as we ought to be. But what about the person in AA who separated from alcohol for a year, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, and is in Alcoholics Anonymous running around untreated? What we need to know is that that person can recreate their life and get reborn if they subscribe to this work. Because what will happen is we'll go through the work maybe once or twice, and we'll stay away, we'll just live in 10, 11, and 12, and we may experience something called reemergence of ego, where the mind starts doing the thinking for us. Instead of being worshippers of this power called God, we start to worship our intellect. Because I know what the steps talk about. I know everyone in AA. I know how to stay sober. And I start using my thinking mind, where the main problem lies, as God. The neat thing about it, we're going to be 2 years old next week. We're going to celebrate 2 years. Our first meeting was June 10th, which was pretty significant for us. We have our second year anniversary next week, and we're really excited about that. In just 2 years, we have this lineage, sponsor, prospect, another prospect, and you'll go to our group and you'll see people sitting in the car before the meeting, not gossiping about others, not talking about dramas, but with a big book and a notepad going through the steps. And there'll be someone else sitting in that car, and you go down to the kitchen, there's a few people sitting there. And we're hanging around after the meeting, looking for new prospects. That's why my home group isn't that popular. Because we're not going to give someone an opportunity to just dump and share what they want about in our meeting. And we have people come down with other addictions, and we're an open discussion, and we invite other people from other fellowships to come down but understand what we are about. And we've had drug addicts come down and lovingly guide them to CA or NA. And we have people with other addictions come down and lovingly guide them to where they need to be. If that's my bartender on the phone, can you tell him I'm a little busy right now? It's okay. There's a little pamphlet that was floating around AA. It was called An Introduction to AA. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, right? And that opens up the door for everyone to come down. And it doesn't give us the right to throw anyone out. But our book also says that the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. So in order to stay stopped, just a desire is going to fall short. But having a desire to stop drinking allows me to walk in here. But does it really make me a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? Having a desire to stop drinking, is that enough to bring me to a place called recovered? Having a desire to stop drinking, does that really allow me to say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? And this is what this pamphlet talks about. It says, you may become a member of AA almost automatically, for the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There is no formal initiation or induction. If, however, after examining your record, you honestly and objectively admit to yourself that you're an alcoholic and that you sincerely want to stop drinking, then to become a member, you have to only attend the meetings, make an energetic and sincere effort to be guided by the advice and experience of those about you, and try with complete sincerity to live according to the AA program, not fellowship. So there's some things we need to do here, and one of them that I love in here is take the advice from the elder statesman and not work my program. And they use the word here, complete with sincerity to live according to the A program, not the fellowship. And we're just so top heavy in fellowship. And we forget about the other three sides of the triangle. So when I said earlier about recovery based in abstinence or in spirit, if my recovery is based in abstinence, am I living in all three sides of the triangle? Is my group talking about living in all three sides of the triangle? Coming to the fellowship, and in the fellowship we find the program. I'm not in the program. We don't come to the program. We experience the program within the fellowship. And then we pass this message on, one drunk to another, in service. And when I live in all three sides of the triangle, I become part of the whole. I'm awake, oneness with this power, no beginning, no end. Are we talking about that? Because that's what our book talks about. Chris, do you want to you have anything? Okay. Any questions? Recovery on the bottom of the triangle, fellowship on one side of the triangle, and service on the other side of the triangle. Chris is writing it here. So we come to the fellowship. We don't come to the program. And within the fellowship, we have a program called the 12 Steps. And then we go back into the fellowship and pass the message on in service. Bless you. The basic service AA provides is carrying a message one alcoholic to another. Over in one of the forewords, right at the beginning it says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. To show other alcoholics precisely, and they use in our book the words precisely, clear-cut, specific, and exactly. How we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Am I passing that on? Am I giving that to other alcoholics? Show them precisely how we recovered, because that's a call for sponsorship. What do I do with a prospect? Show him or her precisely how I have recovered through this book. What message am I passing? When I work with others, most people who come to me, I've seen them in the rooms. I have this thing for attracting chronic relapses. My sponsor says it's penance for my last life, but I get these chronic relapses. But I will still walk them through the book and qualify them. Are they clear on the phenomenon of craving? Are they clear on the mental obsession to alcohol? Do they understand what the spiritual malady is about? And part of what I do in working with others is, besides taking them through the steps, is give them some first step considerations. Go through Bill's story. Do they identify with some of the information in doctor's opinion? I'll have them write out a history of their alcoholism. And not a novel, but a quick history of their first drink to the last drink. And they write about the craving, the obsession, the unmanageability, and the consequences. And what we'll do is we'll talk about the first step. And this is what goes on in my group a lot, because we have step meetings each week. And we'll do the 12 steps in 8-week rotations. And our speakers are really clear on the steps. Not their opinions, but they come at it from experience, out of this book. And I get them to understand that the insanity of alcohol for an alcoholic precedes the first drink. That what is power, lack of power, choice, and control? That I have no input into the decision that's made for me by alcoholism to go pick up a drink. That I can't safely think the drink through. I can't play the tape to the end. I can't think the drink through because I'm using a sick mind to overcome a sick mind. Do they get that? That for me, if the main problem center is in the mind, not the body. And we don't tell them, bring the body and the mind will follow, because that's the last thing we want showing up, right? And I let them know that the powerlessness and the lack of choice and control is in the mind before the first drink. And once they pick up the drink, it's in the body. And I let them know, we talk about how we are going to drink. That's what step one tells us. And we have no idea what that day looks like. And then we bring them to step two. Are they willing, yes or no, to believe in a power greater than themselves? Any conception that works for them. Group of drunks, good orderly direction. Not concerned with that. Are you willing, yes or no? A spiritual experience begins with a mustard seed of willingness. And we'll get them to step two. Have them go through chapter to the agnostics. Chapter to the agnostics will open up all doors where someone has them closed in showing up with God. It blows the doors wide open. Work with someone through chapter to agnostics, and any contempt prior to investigation will be removed because of the considerations in that chapter. Step three, are you willing to get to this power? Simple decision. Contemporary A will tell you work the first three steps. Chris said it before, 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. Step three is just a decision to get to the power that I'm willing to grow to in two. And then we walk them through step four. And we get to look at all the manifestations of self that are killing the alcoholic. All the contempt, the prejudices, the belief systems, the resentment, fears. We get to look at sex inventory. All those things that are in here that don't want to come out. The wedge that blocks us from this power. Got to get removed. One of the disturbing things why people don't like my group too much and a lot of big book groups is because we don't talk about what we need to acquire to get better and all our issues and triggers and dramas. We talk about the removal of things in order to get better, and that is not pleasant. Walking someone through the work is about removal, subtraction, not addition. We don't need to acquire anything. I can't stress that. I need more tolerance. You don't need to go out there to acquire it. I need more patience. I need more a loving spirit towards others. I don't need to acquire that. It's been given to me. The reason why I'm not experiencing it is because other things have gotten in the way. Calamity, pomp, worship of other things, and a whole truckload of other areas. And when we go through the work, it feels like we're dying. That's why the work is not popular, and groups that talk about the work are not that popular. We will lose people during inventory because it feels like we're dying, and we are. We're experiencing the death of self. And ego and the alcoholic mind is fighting for its life. It's about removal. We are, when we do this work, by the way, going home. God gave us everything we need to walk this journey when we got here. Everything. And little by slowly, it has gotten blocked. And other things have become more important. And other things have gotten in the way. And belief systems, we worship. Our thinking mind, we worship. We worship our money, we worship our job, we worship our cause, we worship Him, we worship her, and we forgot about the simple worship of the power. And what the work does is remove all of that. It doesn't feel comfortable. Going through the archway is our drastic and revolutionary proposals, and it's uncomfortable. But when we get to the other side, we experience bliss. So things get removed. And go to the, I'm going to the sponsor who told me put the plug in the jug, it's easier. Right? But when we're experiencing the bitter end and the back is against the wall, guess what? We'll look for people, groups of people like this, and we'll look for the groups that are talking about the message. Because we know it's the last house on the block. And then we'll revisit the work over and over and over again. And we'll sit down with other people in five and talk about this stuff. And that really is evidence of God. Because if you're anything like me, you came in here and no one's going to know anything. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not giving up anything. And then we sit with another drunk or do personal persons, the multiple fifth steps like I've experienced recently, and share with groups of people about everything. Everything, all our resentment, all our fears, the sex inventory, our belief systems, all of it. And the wedge that's blocking us from God starts to get removed. Power of God, see one drunk working with another and that drunk sharing everything with a group of drunks. That's God at work. The drunk wakes up to that usually later. And after some six and seven considerations, you see that same alcoholic who was consumed with self on the way in here is now going out and making amends for the harms he or she has caused to others because they've gotten clear on that. I love my home group and a few other groups that I visit because they talk about amends, about actively going out and making amends, financial restitution, making amends for the harms that they're clear they caused, and getting freer. Talk about amends to other people, other amends in that you're not aware of will show up. Contemporary AA, middle of the road solution, does not want to talk about amends. Or if they do, it'll go something like this. I stopped drinking, that's enough amends. No, it is not. Go ask the people you've harmed if that's enough. I've annoyed more people than I've harmed. Go knock on a door to Joe's house and say, Joe, did I annoy you or did I harm you? And let's hear it from Joe. Right? I have to quit playing God. And then we enter the world with a spirit intent as we clean up our amends. Is my recovery based in absence or a spirit, and what is my group carrying? Am I talking about the promises in step 10? Am I talking about prayer and meditative life and working with others? Because we can get stuck on the second half of the first step. My life was unmanageable. I couldn't stop the drunk. I had no control of the stopping and the starting. Treatment center after treatment center. Stop drinking. Come around here a little while. Wrinkles get out of my belly. And suddenly my external world looks manageable. She's letting me back in the bedroom. I got a job. I got a pocket full of money. Took a shower to have new clothes on. My life appears to be manageable. I'm cured. And I get stuck on that. And I forget that alcoholism is a very patient illness also. It'll wait. And I get stuck on the second half of the first step and start to worship external conditions or the feeling good stuff. I feel good today. Start to worship my emotions, right? I feel good today, so I don't need to do anything else. My group, you're going to get called on that. Who are you working with? Who's your sponsor? Where are you in the steps? That disturbs a lot of people. But you walk into that group and you're looking for a solution, we'll offer it to anyone. And we have people who show up who just hang around, have a cup of coffee, a few pieces of cake, and don't even put a dollar in the basket and leave. That's okay. Welcome back next time. maybe you need to go drink some more. And then you're not consumed with coffee and biscuits, you're consumed with how do I get better. So, that's all I got for this morning. Thanks.
Just to reiterate something that Peter was alluding to, this is what happened to me for 7 years around the program. I was up in the fellowship. The cat that finally 12-stepped me, set me down and qualified me, he started asking some specific questions. He said, Chris, you know, we've got a three-part program built to defeat a three-part illness. And so if you're in all three of these parts equally, you'll get well. You'll stay well. You'll stay content in your skin. But if you get a little top-heavy on some of these other areas, you won't. I mean, and he asked me point blank about the recovery piece. He said, Chris, did you start on the title page and do everything it asked you to do in those first 100 pages? Did you work all 12 steps? I worked them to the best of my ability, you know, blah, 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 blah. Chris, it's a yes or no. Come on, Bubba. Did you work them or not?
Well, no.
Okay. And he X'd it out. He says, what about this unity? What is that? You know, it's meetings. You go into meetings? Yes. We'll give you that one. What about service? Well, I empty ashtrays, but the book is specifically clear. What's our service is to carry the message to the newcomer. Oh, but I remember, you didn't work the 12 steps, so you got no message to carry. So that's two. He was pretty direct with me. That's two out of three, you know? I mean, it's like a three-legged stool. You know, you start cutting legs off, and pretty soon you're on pretty precarious balance here, you know? So once he's got to see that, Chris, you've been living in the fellowship, but you're just not doing the program. Finish the work, and then you'll have something to carry with a newcomer. Last night we were talking, I got to talk to some of y'all in break. There's fodder for about three workshops on the stuff that I was talking about on break. It's just y'all are asking great questions. In a publication called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, some of y'all read that one. It's a story of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I mean, AA published it. It's a conference-approved literature. He wrote this in 1940. He says, we did not tell our drinking histories in meetings back then. We didn't need to. A man's sponsor already knew the details. Frankly, we didn't think it was anybody's business. We all knew how to drink. What we wanted and needed to know was how to get sober and stay sober. Somebody jammed me, you know, and said, well, Chris, but you need to understand, it's our stories that helps. I understand that. In the 12-step call, I need to reel you in with my story. Everybody did that. Ebby did it to Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson did it to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob to Bill D. And on down the road, that's everybody did that. But guys, if you got them reeled in, it's like fishing, you know, if you got them reeled in with your story, when are you going to set the damn hook? You know, it's like, when are you going to reel him in? Start talking about the solution. We just sit around and think that we're going to get everybody in here with a story. We've got to stop. And this business about sharing our dumping in our meeting, the big book says in the chapter Working with Others, he says it's not when and how to give that's in question. He says it's not giving that's in question. It's just when and how to give. Because once we start letting the newcomer depend on us rather than God, we're in trouble. Make sense? I need to go to a meeting and talk about what's going on today. Well, did you talk to God about it? Oh, well, no. Well, how... It always kills me. When you guys, you come into an AA meeting who has historically a poor record with relationships, right? And then you come in and say, well, me and my boyfriend are having some problems and I need to talk about that. Why would you come into this room to talk about your damn relationships? Why don't you go to God and talk about that relationship and get some clarity on about what you need to do? Should I stay? Should I go? What? Should I take that job? Should I not? Who ultimately knows? Creator of the universe has been my experience. Do I come before the meeting in the fellowship and talk to people about that? Absolutely. But during an hour, folks, Jiminy, why can't we just talk about the program? On the off chance that there may be a newcomer sitting in here miserable. Peter referred to earlier, and I just mentioned this in Shut Up. in this hospital where I've worked for 13 years, we used to get one or two old-timers in there, cats that would have a few years of sobriety and relapse, and now they're back in treatment. You know, but mostly what we would get was new people who had never had any quality sobriety. I want to tell you something, guys. In the last 3 or 4 years, we've noticed this unbelievable change of people that had 7 years, 15 years, 20 years, who relapsed. 20 years away from a drink and picked up. Absolutely tragic to lose that kind of sobriety. And why did they? Because spiritually they got disconnected. Spiritually, the spiritual malady, the internal condition that we were talking about earlier, started to return, and they got irritable, restless, and discontent. Guys, I introduce myself because the book tells me as a recovered alcoholic. Introduce yourself as a man who has recovered. What my book says. But I could get sick again. If I stop doing the things necessary to stay connected to that power, I will get sick again. Alcoholism will return with a vengeance, and I'll use again. And I don't want to do that, folks. 1987, when I got back to this program, I didn't have anything to lose. Nothing, guys. I had a $600 pickup and a couple of pairs of Levi's and a drawer full of t-shirts, and that was it. Today, I've got a lot of stuff that God has given me, and I got a lot to lose. I don't want to lose that. So I'm going to keep working the steps, and I'm going to make sure that I pay attention, that I belong to a group where we focus on this literature. I don't want to live off the experience I had 18 years ago. I want to have an experience that I had sitting at that little cafe over where we're staying by the lake talking to God. It takes my breath away. Current experience. Good can be the enemy of the best. Is this all there is? I mentioned it last night when I talked. My sponsor says, Chris, how free do you want to be? Do you just want to not drink one long, painful day at a time? Is that what you want? You can have that. Or do you want to be absolutely free in your skin to start doing the cool things that God wants you to do? Because every one of you got stuff that you're supposed to be doing. And I don't know what that is. God does. We need more people out playing music, painting pictures, starting businesses, going to school, instead of sitting in meetings and pissing and moaning why their life is so boring. Freaks me out. That's not my experience on the spiritual path. It is not boring. Not boring at all. Y'all got any questions?
Our book talks about how we can shield the alcoholic. We can try shielding the alcoholic and working with others. And that doesn't work because he winds up with a bigger explosion than ever, right? Bigger drunk. Don't go with his drinking. Watch your issues. Watch my triggers. Things like that. Can't go to a wedding. Can't go to a party because there's liquor being served. I can't be around Frank and Joe because they drink. Can't be around my aunt and my grandparents because they drink. And that's living in bondage. That's walking on a minefield. And a book promises just the opposite. If we're spiritually fit, we go anywhere, right? But what about the shield? What about the shield, you know, the people who use AA as a shield, the shield right in here? And you can know those people. I'm not talking about newcomers now, because we're encouraging newcomers to make lots of meetings and obviously get involved with our program. But how I've seen too many of our elder statesmen, as I'll lovingly call them, the old-timers, make the 9 o'clock meeting, the 12 o'clock meeting, the 3 o'clock meeting, the 6 o'clock meeting, the 9 o'clock meeting, hold on till next morning when they get to the 9 o'clock meeting. I've made 4 meetings today, and they're sober 30 years. I made 4 meetings today, and they're sober 15, 20 years. Well, I told my wife she has to take the kids to the park because I got my home group tonight. Well, shame on you. If I'm sober this long and still making 7 meetings a week because I feel I have to make another meeting rather than I get to get to a meeting when I'm moved to. I don't make 7 meetings a week anymore. But we can use AA as a shield and deny the family this recovery, deny the family this new spirit we're apparently given, right? By taking the kids to the park and the kids to soccer practice and the wife out for dinner and things like that. But no, I have to be at my home group, and I can't be around anything that resembles drinking, anything that looks like it may be drinking going on, and I can't go there if there is drinking, and I hide out in Alcoholics Anonymous. I use AA as the shield. you know. And I can only have a conversation with someone that has to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. If I talk about anything other than AA, I shut down. That's not how God wants us to live. It says we're sure that God wants us to live happy, joyous, and free. So we get an opportunity to go pack into the stream of life and go out there and do great things. Whether it's starting a business or, in my case, great things on having respect within my family again and having a family. That's been my great accomplishment, to be invited back into my family's home. And they don't have to hide their jewelry and their pocketbooks anymore. To have my brothers confide in me and my dad confide in me. That's been my vision that God has given me. That's been my great accomplishment on this journey. And I've been around where drinking is served. I've been to weddings. I've been to parties. I've been to gambling casinos. I picked up, I don't know how many drunks drinking and addicts stoned out of their mind and taking them to treatment. And my mind never, ever, ever, ever said, oh no, we're getting too close. I got drink symptoms today. I got issues today. I'm in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. But back to what I was getting at, we'll have people in this deal using AA as a shield. And that's just a horrible way to live. That's not what God wants. So are we doing stuff like that, or are we recovering and shouting that from the rooftops? Questions? A book says we can't transmit something we haven't got. And we will what we do, and sometimes that's untreated alcoholism. And part of being untreated is experiencing the bedevilments on page 52 and experiencing being restless, irritable, and discontented. In a word, I'm bored, I'm frustrated, I'm full of fear. Maybe that person needs to revisit the work, or maybe they need to go revisit the work and go help others. I've gotten frustrated in AA many times. I've gotten angry in AA, become fearful in AA. But I can't remember, or I can count maybe on one hand, the times I've been bored in Alcoholics Anonymous and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've experienced a lot of other things. But bored, we get excited, we get passionate about this. And the more I revisit this work and work with others and have experiences with God and read other inspirational books and being quick to see where religious people are right and growing up spiritually, as we grow up spiritually after the drink is done and we're not drinking and it isn't on us anymore, well, then what am I doing? Something called emotional sobriety. Am I growing up spiritually? I mean, to be bored, maybe we need to just revisit the work.
Revisit the work, which of course means continue to work with other alcoholics. And I'll get right down to it. With so many people that I see that are stuck in the work and they're coming and they're just flop. Then ask them, buddy, how many people are you sponsoring? Well, you know, I had a guy last week that was in. Buddy, you're sober 15 years and you're not sponsoring anybody. It's no wonder you're bored. I mean, it's like we talked about last night. I mean, the passion that I seem to always have about this program all revolves around all the little guys I sponsor, because they're a part of your life and you're a part of their life and you get to see and watch them. How can you come into a meeting and watch somebody start to crack like an egg right in front of you, and all of a sudden you see the freedom from the bondage of self and the alcohol, and watch them start to get excited about their own life and know that you played a little part in that? How can you not be excited about that? But so many people don't. They sit on the sidelines. This afternoon we're going to talk some more about sponsorship and stuff, and that's one of the key pieces. You want to keep it fresh? Don't keep telling your stupid war story over and over. You want to keep it fresh? Go work with a newcomer, and it will stay absolutely as green as it needs to be. I can assure you. But you'll get the good side, upside of that, of watching their life change too. It's by giving that I get to receive. That's, Chris, how do you keep doing this year after year? Buddy, how can I not do this year after year? You know, and is it? I got to tell you, some of you people that don't know me, some of y'all know me, but I'm the shyest person you'll come across ever. Did y'all see me at dinner last night? I mean, I'm the difficult person to have a conversation with one-on-one, because I'm just shy. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Right up to the point I get from this podium, or get a little guy open across the table with a book, you know, in a big old Starbucks, and we're going at it, talking, and I come outside myself. That's the coolest part of my day, is working with a drunk. Well, that's where the problem is. Not enough 12-step for it. Service, third legacy. Who else got a question?
I can share from experience about that. If we're going to be talking about this book and the 12 steps, a few people came up to me earlier and some last night talking about this, of similar experiences. If we're going to be talking about this book and the 12 steps, we will experience resistance. I'm a Catholic. It's like me walking into church with the Bible under my arm and the priest saying, "Why are you bringing that thing in here for? You're going to cause trouble." But in AA, I walk into a meeting with a big book and they want to tar and feather me after the meeting. Shame on them. Because everyone else is laying down and I'm not speaking up, then I cannot blame them. I'm just as wrong. I'm just as guilty. It's easy to say, well, none of these groups are doing anything. It's the, you know, they're not sponsoring, they're not working through the steps. But I'm attending every one of those meetings and not doing anything about it. Then I'm part of the problem, not the solution. Part of being in the solution is experiencing resistance, and God will give us enough courage, strength, and direction to take the heat. But if we get one drunk and change their life, and they recover, now we got two. And isn't it all worth it? And then two becomes four, and we experience pockets of enthusiasm. It took a lot of courage to put this thing together last year, and this year, and God willing, next year. More personal to me. I moved to Union. I come from Brooklyn, New York, to Staten Island, New York, and now New Jersey. And I've been around a lot of contemporary middle-of-the-road stuff, but always was active in thumper meetings and around, attracted to this message. And I move out to my town, and there's nothing going on. I'm barred from, like, three meetings. They lock the doors when they see me coming, you know. Don't call on him, you know. I went to one meeting, and during the meeting, a guy shared about something to do with another meeting of someone stealing from the basket, and he went on for about 20 minutes at a beginner's meeting, and the group took that topic and ran with it. And they didn't want to call on me, and I raised my hand, and I shared my experience, and they pretty much told me, don't come back here anymore, right? But in my town, there's really not much going on. I'd have to travel a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour embedded to get to meetings that are doing this. And so, with a resentment and a coffee pot, I started my own group, and I found about a half a dozen other men and one woman who were on board with me, and we hammered out a policy of what we're going to talk about, and nothing less than the great fact. Sometimes it goes on, but a group conscience is we speak about the message, we speak about the great fact and nothing less. And we don't attract many people from my town until they hit a bottom, but they're coming from other towns to visit my group, men and women. So something has started, small, but has started. And we have people working with people who are working with people. So I encourage you then to start a group, take the heat. But there's a few women I spoke to over the week, I remember from last year, probably sign up with you, and start a group. And you cannot listen to the contemporary AA message, because a lot of that may not be real alcoholics. And what your mind tells you was impossible to do, don't do this. The Spirit will always prove to be possible, and go do it. Take the book on the Aram and go start a group, maybe. Or just go back to the home group and stop it. Take a stand for what you believe in, what you've experienced, more importantly. Take the heat, but you'll change the lives of others, and you'll attract people who want to be attracted, who want that message. Chris can tell you how much heat he catches. And the same with me.
The book says we build a fellowship around us we crave. We assume we're just going to go find it, but sometimes we got to build it. And the traditions allow us to do that. The fourth tradition says we're autonomous except where we affect AA as a whole, which means we can set up a meeting any way we want. We got down there in the hill country, it was tons and tons of meetings, open discussion hell, and we got tired of driving to those meetings and listening to the stuff. So we started, five, six of us got together, had a group conscience, and decided what we wanted to do. We came up with, you don't have to use AA's preamble. You don't have to read how it works. You can meditate 5 minutes before the meeting if you want. You can do anything you want, as long as it doesn't affect AA as a whole. You'll follow us? And it's like there are groups out there in Dallas, Texas right now, we were talking last night, where they ask you not to bring a big book. Unheard of. But that's their right, if that's what they want to do. We have a format that says, in our preamble, it says, we are not here as a dumping ground for your problems. Please feel free to come before or after the meeting if you just need to talk. But during this hour, we're going to talk about the topic being presented from the first 164 pages of the book. Not the daily reflection, not the one day at a time, not the great effing vine. The big book, the original message. Y'all follow us? It was a grapevine article in the 70s that started all this open discussion crap to begin with. I'm not a fan. Not a fan. Obviously, you can tell that. You can set it up any way you want. We've got a little bell ringing system. You have 3 minutes to share, please. If you're 50 years sober, you have 3 minutes to share. If you're 2 days sober, you have 3 minutes to share. At the end of that 3 minutes, you're going to get a little bell rung on your butt. Everybody's going to laugh. And then the next person that gets to share. Because everybody wants a chance to share. The problem is not the individual personality. I hear people all the time, you need to come to our group and straighten this guy out. To heck with you. I'm not straight. My book says I've ceased fighting anything or anyone. I'm not there to do battle with anybody. I'm saying it's the formats are the problem. Change the stupid formats to do it any way you want. And you'll look forward to going to those meetings. And the cats won't be coming and dumping problems. And you won't be burdened with all of that. Again, this afternoon when we talk about sponsorship, we're going to get into some of that pretty deep. Just jump in there. It's uncomfortable. So what? It'll get comfortable quick. What you got, boss?
For me, as quickly as possible, but I don't let the prospect determine that. Remember, they are very ill, so I'm not going to let the prospect make a decision, a life-changing decision, spiritual life, spiritual death. So I will move them through as quick as possible. I have some guys who get to the fourth step in a couple of days. I have guys who are in amends in a couple of weeks. I have guys who are sponsoring people before their 90 days is even on the horizon. I've had other guys who take a little bit longer. What I'm concerned about is moving through it. I have I'm working with somebody who, twice he called me up, he's balked in his fourth step. And the third time he called me, I says, you fired me, get another sponsor. And it isn't because, see, it isn't like they don't have the instructions to do it. You have the instructions. You know what to do. You have a first step problem. Again. And you're not drinking. There's a reservation. There's a lurking notion. There's something that's telling you you've become the power again. I don't need to go to some of the many, any lengths to recover. And if you keep walking, you don't want what I have to offer. So I'm fired. I don't fire anyone. They fire me. So it's moving them. It's taking action. And the depth of my sponsors told me the depth of my willingness is manifested in my actions. And I look for what the person is doing, not what they're saying, but as long as we're moving. So I've gotten guys, when I say I've gotten guys, that sounds a little bit much. God has moved me to take someone to work, because that's where it's coming from. From a few weeks, to within a couple of months, they're through, but certainly no longer than that.
The history books, the archival stuff is full of it. It's 30 days max. None of the original cats in Alcoholics Anonymous took long. Bill Wilson was in detox. He was in treatment 3 times. He left AMA both his first 2 times. His third time, when Ebby got hold of him, he stuck. He stayed there. He was on his 9th day detoxing in Towns Hospital when he had his spiritual experience. Everybody thinks he had his spiritual experience and then he went and did the work. That's not what the book says. He had already done a 4th and 5th step and was ready to make his amends when he had his barn-burning spiritual experience that Bill's story talks about in A Vision for You. I mean, it's quite clear. Dr. Bob took a couple of weeks he started making his amends on on June 10th when he supposedly had his last drink. He went out that night, went around and made his amends and finished up the work. Boom, boom. These co-founders worked the steps in less than 2 weeks, but it's okay to sit in a meeting and tell somebody it's okay to sit on your stupid fourth step for 9 months. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, then we wonder why our success rates are so low. It's the steps, again, that get me connected to God, and God's the one that gets me sober. So why would I want you to take your time? Again, it's what Peter said. If somebody's dragging their feet on the fourth step, it's not a fourth step problem. It's a first step problem. Because you obviously think your case is different. Make sense? That's a little rough, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first thing I want to know is if you did the first five. Okay. Just give me a second here. Okay. For me, some of the things I had to take a look at with 6 and 7 was what I experienced was 6 and 7 became my first step for my life. I got to see the manifestations of the defects of character or shortcomings that were there, the things that were blocking me, keeping me in bondage, blocking me from having an experience with God. And I've given some assignments before I read from the text. And one of the assignments was the things that were clear, that were revealed to me. And they came in a lot. There were a lot of different hats I saw in my fifth step, right? But the defects that were still glaring, I've got to list them on a piece of paper. And what I did was list the opposite of those defects. Dishonest, honest. Selfish, giving. You know, jealous, trusting. Whatever it may be. Fear, courage. And I offer that stuff to a power of my understanding, my God. It was a humble offering. Not telling God, remove this and give me that. But it was just a humble offering because God is going to mold us as He sees fit anyway. There were some questions I had to consider in 6 and then into 7. After the quiet, being quiet for an hour, after our fifth step, it says, carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have admitted anything for building an archway through which we shall walk a free man at last. And I got to see with that simple statement preceding the sixth step, it says, free man at last. I thought a lot of things had gotten me free. A few times I thought I was standing free. But our book says, at last, which means finally free. With me? See, what gets in the way, by the way, and you'll hear this because not enough groups are talking about what goes on in 6 and 7, these two steps out there that don't spend too much time in them because we don't know what we're talking about, right? But what gets in the way of this work is the way. Are the stones properly in place? Because we're building this archway. And is God constructing this archway, or are we constructing this archway? Have we skipped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Because if I have, the archway is just going to collapse. It says, here's what's key about 6 and 7 here. With step 6, it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, not the sponsor's satisfaction, not the group satisfaction, but now we're making to our satisfaction. Because they know at this point, we've, you know, they talk about the fifth step promises. We're into this experience. It may be the infancy of a spiritual experience, but our reliance is more upon God than another human being. And they're saying, listen, to your satisfaction, can you answer those questions we just read? It says we then look at step 6, and we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can He now take them all, every one? He better. Because these are the things that are blocking me from having this experience. And what I did was I showed up to God with this work, understanding that I didn't know everything. I was a humble student, but I offered up what appeared to be my defects. It showed up in 5 and the opposites. Father, thank you for removing this, and thank you for allowing me to go out with this. And I said that was affirmed with my 7-step prayer. The 7-step prayer has very little to do with me. It has a whole lot to do with God and people around us. And we ask in that prayer for strength to go out from here to do His bidding. Well, what are they talking about? to go make amends in 9, live in 10 and 11, and go work with others. The seventh step prayer has very little to do with me. When I did, some of us may experience this with 6 and 7. Earlier I was talking about experiencing the death of self. And I truly experienced that. It was the second or third time through the work. I got my instructions for 6. I answered the questions. Everything was okay. And I turned to my 7-step prayer. And somewhere in there, I felt like I was vibrating on the inside. I felt like a newcomer walking into AA for the first time. I felt like I'd never even been to an AA meeting, that I knew nothing. And I felt like I was on shaky ground, no thinking about a drink, but completely turned upside down. And I did my 7-step prayer. And I was moved to go into meditation because I was just shaking all over. And what came out of my meditation experience with the 7-step, after going through the first 6 proposals, was, Father, save me from me, because I will do me in faster than anyone. Later on, what I found out, because I called up my sponsor about this, and he says, you're having an experience. What went on, that feeling I was getting, was truly experiencing the death of self, because it felt like I was dying. Something took place that day in my home. And I wanted, with every fiber of my being, to put my hands on the wheel and take charge. And something very quietly said, let it be. And I fought like hell that day to live and let live and let it be. As the day played out, it worked out perfectly. And if I would have put my hands on the wheel, I would have had another drama of life. And that was the shift for me. So sometimes we'll get that. And I experienced my first step for life in 6 and 7. So we're not talking about some of 6 and 7 and what goes on. It's the shift. It's the change. And in our 12 and 12, it says rubber hits the road here. What am I going to do now that certain things have been revealed to me in 5? Am I clear on what's blocking me from God? Fear. Fear will wear a lot of different hats. Going through the 5th step, fear will show up in 100 different areas. But when I funnel all those things down, it comes out to one word, fear. In fact, when we do our 5th step, where we really throw a lot of that stuff into a funnel, what will come out over and over and over is the evil and corroding thread shot through the fabric of our existence. It's called fear. Fear with others, fear in sex, fear with money, fear with careers, fear with everything. Fear, fear, fear. Well, what am I going to do about fear? Try to change it on my own? Can I will myself into a spiritual experience? No. Turn fear to this power. And last I'll say about this, there was a friend in Staten Island who says he's had a problem with arrogance for a long time. He knows he's arrogant, everyone else knows he's arrogant, and he turned to God and he says, take this arrogance from me. And he still remains somewhat arrogant. Then he turned to God and says, do with me as you see fit. And he realized that some of that arrogance is able to cut through the fat and working with a drunk and help them. Right? Cut right through. And he realized, it's not up to me to figure out what's good and bad, but I just offer this to God. And this guy still, some people consider him pompous and everything, but he's worked with so many people and helped hundreds. And disturbs a lot of feathers, ruffles a lot of feathers, disturbs a lot of people when he gives a talk. So. Lunch.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you very much, Chris. Please let me remind you that we need your contribution. This is the 7-step hat, which will pass only once today now. And once tomorrow. Please don't forget, we need your support. We will have a break of 1 hour. So it's about 20 past 1. We will meet again at around 20 past 2, please, okay? 1 hour break. Have I forgotten anything? Nothing else?